I just hit the start button.
All right, cool. Well, for those of you listening to this call, this is the Rockstar Triathlete Academy's Business of Triathlon Coaching call. Be sure that if you haven't yet, you go back into the forum where you have full access in the protected section of the members forum to previous Business of Triathlon Coaching calls, because there's lots of good stuff in there that we've talked about in the past. So that being said, today we've got two things that we're going to talk about.
Right.
The first is a question about subdomains that we received on the forum, and the second is the top five issues faced by triathlon coaches. So what do you think, Kerry? You ready to dive in?
Yeah, let's dive right in. Yeah, let's start off with the first one with subdomains. And I believe that was put in by Patrick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he wants to know what are the best ways to use subdomains in terms of, I'm guessing he's meaning like websites and things like that in terms of Google and all that stuff. And, you know, really that area is switching all the time. And so, you know, staying on top of Google, that's a tough one. But in general, the best rule of thumb is go off of keywords that are going to be specific to the article that or the page that you're going off of for the subdomain. So, for instance, let's
now,
say...
Now, Kerry, it may be useful to back up and explain what a subdomain actually is.
Sure, yeah. So a subdomain is, let's say you go to, all right, for instance, I go to ESPN.com all the time, and then you want to go check out the NFL. And, you know, so if you went to ESPN.com and then you went to NFL on there, the subdomain would be ESPN.com/NFL, and that would be your subdomain. So does that make sense, Ben?
Well, it would be that, or it would be typically more frequently something like ESPN.NFL.com.
Right.
Like
yeah.
ESPN/NFL, a lot of times is just a folder, whereas ESPN.NFL.com would usually be like a subdomain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's another way to describe it. So basically, it's a way of search engines or just people in general that really know your stuff quite well to find your info and material a lot easier. So, you know, for instance, let's say you're doing an article or you've got a page on, you know, bike wheels, you know, all the different bike wheels out there, all the different racing type bike wheels. So you might, that could be your subdomain. So it could be whatever your website is, dot, bike wheels or race wheels or whatever you want to put in there, or, /race wheels or bike wheels, whatever it may be, whatever works for you. So that is kind of what you want, to do basically with your subdomains. There's a lot of different things you can do with them, and Ben can kind of talk about some of that too.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people kind of go overkill on subdomains. You'll see some sites that literally have hundreds of subdomains, and the idea is that the people that own those sites are relying on the possibility that each of the keywords associated with that subdomain is going to improve their search engine optimization. So, for example, we could have, if Kerry and I wanted to, we could have triathlonwetsuits.rockstartriathlete.com. We could have triathlonbikes.rockstartriathlete.com, so on and so forth. And all of those would be subdomains. Now, the issue, like Kerry said, is that search engines are constantly changing the way that they rank websites. And so putting all of your money on creating all these different subdomains may not be the best use of your time. It can be a good way to organize or to structure your site. And sometimes sites that use subdomains versus using folders can rank higher in some search engines, but it's not like a hard and fast rule. So when you're trying to decide whether you're going to create, or, you know, let's use the Rockstar Triathlete example again. If Kerry and I were trying to decide, okay, we have to create an article on triathlon wetsuits, and we want a lot of people to be able to find that article in search engines. But one option is that we could create a subdomain. We could actually literally log into the control panel for the domain control that we use with Rockstar Triathlete. Go in there, create a new subdomain called triathlonwetsuits.rockstartriathlete.com, and then go and put all our articles or anything having to do with triathlon wetsuits in there. Option two is we could create a folder. We could just basically make rockstartriathlete.com/triathlonwetsuits. And that's not a subdomain, that's a folder, but that's another place that we could put all of our stuff. And in that case, rather than people going to www.triathlonwetsuit.rockstartriathlete.com, they'd go to rockstartriathlete.com/triathlonwetsuit. And then finally, we could do neither of those, and we could just put all our information about triathlon wetsuits onto something like a blog, like we currently do, and then just tag that blog or post with the keyword triathlon wetsuits, and also use, as we do, a search engine optimization tool called SEO plugin that lets us type in keywords and titles for each of our posts that allow search engines to easily identify them, and we get pretty good rankings with that. So subdomains can be good for organization. If you had a website with hundreds and hundreds of separate sections and pages, it might be a good idea, but it also can be time-consuming to create a new subdomain every time you're adding stuff to your site. And the other issue is that, you know, all the images, all of the content for that specific subdomain has to ideally be contained within that subdomain, and so it can just get messy and time-consuming in terms of maintenance time for the site owner. However, the upside to it is cost. You could pay whatever, $60 a year for a domain name, or you could pay $10 a year for a subdomain. I actually own personally about 70 different subdomains that are all under one domain. I only pay $10 a year for each of those subdomains. If I own them as regular domains, I'd be shelling out a lot of cash, seven times the amount that I pay right now for owning all those subdomains. Some are website ideas that I have yet to work on. Some are websites that I own. But basically, that's the skinny on subdomains. Anything to add into that, Kerry?
You covered it pretty darn well, my friend.
All right, cool. So,
all right.
Hopefully that was helpful, Patrick, and good question.
Yes. So next thing we're going to get into is we're going to get into the five problems triathlon coaches face. And the first thing we're going to talk about is communication with athletes. And this can be tricky on a lot of different levels. You know, you can have athletes that just, you know, they'll communicate with you, but they're not leaving all the information that you need for you to, you know, do your job in terms of maybe like paces, heart rate zones, whatever it may be, the stuff that's really important for you to get a feel for what's going on, or, you know, they just might not communicate with you at all, period, or they might just want to talk your ear off and, you know, tell you, like, you know, what they had for a snack and how they couldn't tie their shoelaces together or whatever. So there's definitely ways you want to set that up. They're going to be most effective. One thing is that both Ben and I use Training Peaks, and Training Peaks will allow the athletes to put in their actual training info during the day. So they can log on, you know, the workout times, they can log in what they modified, if anything. They can upload all their data from different types of, like, basically every power meter out there is compatible with, as well as GPS tools, heart rate monitors. You can really go pretty crazy with the data you get there. And, you know, there's pluses and minuses to that too, but, you know, basically, I think if you're coaching someone online and they're far away, I'm a big fan of getting as much information as you can get so you can get a good feel for what's going on if you're not hands-on with the person all the time. That's one way of doing it. Now, if they're not giving you any communication whatsoever, you need to explain to them and why it's important that they, you know, they log in and give you that information, Or you can even do, you know, with some of my athletes, you know, we have a weekly time where we just talk on the phone and, you know, just go over things, how things are doing. And usually it doesn't take more than, you know, 10, 15 minutes of my time once I get them going. In the beginning, everyone's going to be a little bit more time intensive. But once they get rolling, you know, pretty much as everyone, you know, gets in the rhythm, they're good to go. And there's usually less, time involved with, you know, coddling them on and coaching them. So those are some of the communication things. And then also, like I said, there's the people that are going to talk your ear off. And with those people, you got to just set clear boundaries. You know, you can talk to me once a week on the phone or whatever you have it set up. You got to just make it clear. You can talk to me this time, many times a week for this long, or you can send me this many emails or whatever it is. With those people, you just got to set very clear boundaries on what they can do, and usually in my experience, they've always respected that. So that is what I have to say on that. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree that using a management tool like Training Peaks is a really good idea in terms of communicating with athletes, because it really cuts down on the flow of emails that go back and forth. You can, if you want, not even accept emails at all from your athletes. Like, one model that you could use, and I've actually considered switching to this model because I do accept unlimited emails from my athletes, and that would be that you only take messages through Training Peaks, and you have a forum for your athletes to ask questions so that people are always bouncing questions off one another. Currently, what I do is I accept messages through Training Peaks. I don't require that people send their messages that way, and I allow emails. But a forum is something that I'm seriously considering moving to for even the individual athletes that I work with, just so, kind of similar to Rockstar Triathlete, when Carrie and I answer a question, everybody can see it, versus, you know, if anybody emails rockstartriathlete.com and asks a question, I usually tell them to go post in the forum rather than answering it, because you end up answering the same question a lot of times over and over again. So the other thing that's important, though, is that you not take it to the extent where you're trying to avoid communication with an athlete. I have been fired before by athletes when specifically they're doing something like filling out their Training Peaks logs, and they don't email me, and they don't leave me a message on Training Peaks, but they'll write on their log, tweaked my ankle during this run, not sure what to do, please advise. And if I'm not going in and reading their log, then they could get upset and fire me if I go 3, 4, 7 days without reading their logs. So my rule is every 72 hours, I log in there and I review the spreadsheets for my athletes, review their comments, log out, and keep going. So that way I nip any issues in the bud as they arise if I see any issues going on. And then I do a more comprehensive overview once a week in terms of actually going in there and looking at what's going on. And that kind of leads into, I guess, the problem number two that triathlon coaches face, and that would be time management. So I'll turn it over to you in a second, Terry. But, you know, with time management, I think the major thing is finding a way to effectively write programs and deliver programs and communicate with athletes all at once. And that's another reason that I personally use something like Training Peaks. This isn't meant to be a commercial for Training Peaks, but I mean, I pay $49 a month for Training Peaks, and it saves me probably 10 to 15 hours a month. And to me, my time is well worth $5 an hour. Training Peaks essentially allows you to like drag and drop workouts that you've already written, save workouts. I save all my workouts that I write, so I only have to write them once, then I can reuse them over and over again among different groups of athletes. It lets you write plans and use those plans with athletes. From a time management perspective, versus using Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, any other training system really, and trust me, I've used a lot of them, a really good way to go is to use something like Training Peaks or Training Peaks in terms of like a central management tool that's like your library that you train all your athletes with, My only complaint about Training Peaks is it doesn't have an offline option for Mac users. I'm a Mac user, and a lot of times, like for example, I travel a lot. I fly a lot. I'd love to be able to work on my clients' programs while I'm in the air flying and then upload them to the internet when I land, but I can't do that with Training Peaks. That's probably my only beef that I have to pick with it, is that they don't have kind of a Mac offline solution, even though they do have one for a PC. So, Kerry, thoughts?
Yeah, basically all the stuff that Ben was saying is really good. And one of the things you can do, too, is within Training Peaks, again, not to be a Training Peaks commercial, but they, you know, the fact of the matter is that's what he and I use. So if you don't like that, stop. So anyway, basically, you can have all kinds of different programs, or sorry, different workouts that you can save, and you can save them all kinds of files and whatever. And you should do that even if you're not using Training Peaks. Just, you know, have different swim workouts, have different cycling workouts, different running workouts that are all periodized for different types points in the year that will give people, you know, specific intervals or drills or whatever it is, and then you can kind of tweak it, tweak the times in them from there to make it appropriate for the given athlete. But that's one way you can really save time, because, I mean, if you're coaching, you know, like 15, you know, plus people, or even, it doesn't even matter, even if you're coaching five people and you have to write out, you know, just a new workout every time for every day, you know, that adds up, versus if you just have the workout saved and you know what time of year they're in, and you know, training phase and training peak and whatever, then it's quite easy just to throw together a bunch of older workouts that you have saved specifically for that athlete, or specifically for that point where that athlete's at, and that will save you a bucket load of time too. The other thing you can do is if you're more of a hands-on guy and you want to do stuff out in the field with people, which is great, you know, just try to do it in group settings as much as you can. Because if you're going around trying to work with, you know, 15 different athletes one-on-one, you know, given, you know, once or twice a week or whatever, that can add up. That can definitely add up on your time, and it's not a great way to leverage yourself. So set up some group settings and just do it like that, you know, and that should do you on there. And that basically takes us into another part of coaching, where you can get athletes who are injured or athletes who get sick a lot. And this can be tricky, and it can be really frustrating at times too. And, you know, the main thing is this, is like, I found more than anything, is err on the side of caution. It's sometimes extreme caution, depending on the athlete, especially if they are a beginner. You know, if something comes up, something's bugging them, or they're just starting to get sick. You know, if I have an athlete and they're just starting to get sick, I pretty much lay right off, like cut everything way, way down, right off the get-go, and make sure they get better. And, you know, there's varying degrees of getting sick, you know, so you know, it depends, but, you know, if they feel like their energy's pretty good and they're just, you know, get a runny nose or whatever, then, you know, you can push them pretty good. But again, you should definitely take a little time off on them and just let them recover and things like that, because you can get athletes into some huge holes. I know I've got myself into some big holes where I just came back too soon, worked out hard, and then, you know, had a total relapse. So you want to take care of that, and then really pay attention to athletes getting injured, and just what their tendencies are, and really make sure that you understand before you start coaching them if they have any of those tendencies. And there's basic exercises you can give your athletes to do, that I do, and it keeps it pretty healthy for just like the main things, you know, work, for shin splints and plantar fasciitis. You know, you can do some, ABC drills with them all the time, have them do those, or just even basic running drills will really help to strengthen the lower leg, you know, walking up in the heels, walking up on the toes. You can do YTWLs for the shoulders. That can also be another issue with guys. And then just doing anything that's going to be kind of like any lateral plane of motion for strength training, or sagittal plane of motion where they're doing some rotational work. Those are all going to be things that are going to help to prevent them from getting injured, and there's a bunch of other stuff I could add in there, but I'm going to let Ben take over on that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when it comes to athletes getting sick and getting injured, you know, obviously we could talk for hours about, you know, healing injuries and rest ice compression elevation and everything else. I actually just did a webinar on that for USA Triathlon, and it did go for an hour. So we're not talking about necessarily like methods to heal athletes once they get sick or once they get injured, but what to do when it happens. And that's where you do have to have a great deal of flexibility as a coach, and that's where I think a lot of coaches kind of lose their touch, is they're able to write these nicely periodized plans in a can, but then as soon as something happens with an athlete, it's like, oh, what the heck? The whole plan is messed up. What do I do? One of the things that's really important to remember is that the very first thing that an athlete needs is some type of reassurance or confidence from you that they're going to be able to get the other through the other side and still be able to do their event. The next thing that's very important that you do is not try to get an athlete to train through an injury. Not say, okay, just try out the plan for this week. If it's still hurting at the end of the week, we'll do something. That's when acute injury becomes a chronic injury or an acute sickness becomes a chronic sickness. The next thing that you should really do almost immediately when an athlete gets sick is go in, if you're using something like Training Peaks, you know, this is something I'll do frequently, just program in 2 to 4 easy days. That'll take you 5 minutes to do, but it shows the athlete that there's some kind of a plan. It gives them confidence, and it helps them to feel like they're not getting completely derailed because coach is still providing them with some workouts that they can do. So, that's really important, and then just communication. Don't let an injured athlete hang. I like to fire off an email at least every couple days that says, hey, how's the ankle? How's the knee? You feeling better? You still have the sniffles? Still got the flu? You know, how's the body feeling? Are you ready to try out some harder workouts? That type of thing. So just lots of communication is really going to help, and then the ability to go in and make quick changes is really important too. And, of course, making sure that your athlete understands that they need to let you know as soon as they start to feel it. And that way, you know, your athletes get better results. They spend less time in downtime, and you look better as a coach. So hopefully you get more business. So, which I guess kind of ties into number four problem that triathlon coaches face, and that's not losing clients in the off season or losing clients in the off season. I know that myself and a lot of other coaches deal with the issue where August, September, October rolls around, the athlete writes in, they're like, okay, well, you know, I'm not doing a triathlon for 7 months now, so see you later. And sometimes they come back and sometimes they don't. Well, if you don't have the foresight to go nip that in the bud and to actually be talking to a client about the off season and about their plans in the off season and about ways that you're going to make them better in the off season before they even have a chance to think about the off season, then you could be in trouble if you're not doing that. So what I'll do is as that last race of the season is approaching, I'm already scheduling into their program for the next week a scheduled phone call or email or Skype session with me where we're going to discuss what weaknesses and limitations we need to tackle in the off season. And then I'm very clear in the off season, kind of like I'm very clear at the beginning of the program when they first sign up, exactly what we're going to go after. And that really helps with people in terms of the drop off. Now, if people still say, okay, you know what, I'm gonna be skiing for the next 3 months. I don't really even care what you tell me to do. I'm not gonna do it because I'm gonna be skiing for the next 3 months. And I've had that happen before. Then just make sure that they know that that you have like a wait list. You have you know, a busy schedule. You might not be able to take them back on. The other thing that can be useful is to actually have a setup fee for your coaching services. You know, a lot of gyms have that $100, $200 joining fee so people don't drop their membership and then join back up again all the time. And then the final thing you can offer them is a discount when they return so that they do come back and sign back up for coaching with you rather than just kind of moving on in the next year and bouncing around or shopping around for coaches. So those are my recommendations. Carrie?
Yeah, basically everything that Ben said, but I think the main thing is just like, you know, what he touched on too is that you know, you get someone educated about the off season, because really that's your bread and butter. I mean, that's if you really want to be a strong athlete, and they want to be a strong athlete and take it to the next level, you got to be training all quote unquote off season. So I mean, depending on where most athletes are, I mean, on season is really only 3 months, and I mean, we all know that if you're just training seriously for 3 months of the year, you're not going to get great results. So it's really just talking to the athletes, making sure that they're aware of how important the off season is, and just staying in contact with them that way, and just building up, you know, a good communication and relationship with them too. You know, if you get a really good relationship with the athlete, and you know, you're on par, and you know you're concerned about them and everything, then and building up a good rapport, then you know they're going to stick with you. And so don't just talk about triathlon stuff with them too. Ask them about other stuff in their life. You know, if they have kids or whatever, you know, talk to them about it. You know, I'm generally interested in that stuff anyway, so it kind of goes good. But you know, just ask them about the other things and just show them that you care and everything like that. And you know, all the other tips that Ben threw in there too are also bang on. But those are the two main things I say: educate and just really. Go out of your way to be a good coach and care and, you know, build up a good relationship with them, and they're going to be a lot more likely to stay with you. So that becomes or takes us into our last of the five questions here, or five issues that coaches face, and that is visibility among a lot of the different triathlon coaches out there. And there's a lot of different ways that you can tackle this. I mean, I think the first thing is really be you more than anything. Just be yourself. There's a lot of coaches out there that, you know, look similar to one another, but, you know, really just be you. Use your own personality and be okay with that. You know, you're going to attract different people for different reasons, and, you know, some coaches are going to work for other some people and some aren't, and you just have to accept that. You know, that's just the way it is. But, you know, that's also your strongest point. So, you know, definitely do that. From there, you know, it's really also just getting out there and in the community and being active, you know, whether it be doing stuff with triathlon clubs, setting up clinics, or at bike shops, getting your name out that way. Those are also good ways of getting your name out there and really sticking out. And I'd say really the primary way to really stick out more than anything is just have people just give, you know, that, I mean, really just coach your people to go out there and rock it and really like you and stuff like that and get along with them good and have a good relationship with them. Because people like that, I mean, they're just going to do nothing but talk good things about you for the most part. You know, they're just going to be like, oh, I'm working with this guy and, you know, he's incredible. He's helped me do this. He's helped me do that. And he's, you know, I've nailed all my goals this year and everything. So, you know, if you do your job as a coach that way, produce results, and just get out there and be yourself and kind of stick out that way and you know, kind of mark yourself out as something that's a little different from everyone else out there. And I think, you know, well, kind of like what Ben and I have done with our website, you know, rockstartriathlete.com. I mean, there's not any other coaching sites out there, in my opinion, with their domain name, that really stick out there that much, you know, triathlontraining.com or, you know, whatever the different sites are out there, you know, the, you know, make it stick out, make it visible that way too, and just be okay with being who you are, and that'll definitely help you. So those are the main things I would say.
Yeah, and I would say identify your communication strength. So for you, it may be video, it may be audio, it may be that you're a gifted writer, any of those. Identify what is a real strong suit for you and produce as much content as possible, useful, unique content. Don't spew the same stuff everybody else is spewing, but find a niche that you're very good at, find a medium that you're very good at communicating with, and produce as much content as possible. My rule when I wake up in the morning is I have to produce a piece of content every day. It can be video, it can be audio, it can be text, it can be a blog post, it can be a series of tweets, it can be an article, it can be a guest blog post, it can be 10 pages in my next book, it can be a magazine article, anything, but every day I have a rule that I have to produce something. And that's really helped me in terms of visibility and in terms of people finding me, because they see the content that I'm producing and they, you know, want me to manage their programs or they want more. And that's the biggest tip that I can give you in terms of visibility is produce value. Don't just sit around and wait for people to come your way and ask you to coach them. Produce, and people will find you. So that is my recommendation. And that is my solution to the last of those top five problems that triathlon coaches face. So if you guys have questions about any of this stuff, use the forum. Go in there and ask us questions. We'd be happy to help you out. Kerry, anything else?
No, like Ben said, you know, utilize us. If you got questions, for sure, we'd be happy to help you. And if you guys have any content, video, or, you know, just like Ben was talking about, it's good to crank out some content, you know, whether it be articles or whatever, and you want us to promote them, shoot them on over. We'll take a look at them, and we'll let you know if we can use them. And we'd be happy to help you that way, too, if you give us some good content. So, yeah, that's basically all I'd say. And, you know, get your questions in there, and we'd be happy to help you guys out.
All right, cool. Later, folks.